MSDN Flash Podcast Show 20. David Griswood and AWS discuss the Windows Azure platform. This show is recorded on the 20th of January 2010. It is the companion show to the UK MSDN Flash newsletter. All the links can be found at bit.ly/MSDN podcast. Hope you enjoy it. Hello, David.
Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. So we share a similar interest these days, and it's nothing to do with the fact we're both Geordies. What is that similar interest now?
It's a technology one, and it's Azure.
Now, you've been working on Azure since July, is that right? Or even a bit before then?
Even a bit before that, probably the last 9 months.
And I've just really switched to it in January. So I'll probably say a few words about myself then and what I'm doing, and then I'll hand over to you. So I've been being a bit of a generalist in the developer evangelism team for the last year and a half. But sat down with my manager at the end of 2009. We had a discussion about where we should spend some more time and effort. And we hit on the idea that I would go 100% starting Jan 1st. I must admit, Azure wasn't top of my list of things I was thinking about on Jan 1st, but I'm now full-time on it, which is great. I mean, it's a really interesting, exciting bit of technology. And I have been tracking it for a very long time. So, you know, I remember talking about SQL Azure long before we called it SQL Azure way back. So it's good to now kind of just wake up every day and know what I'm going to do. And that's kind of make sure that Azure is understood by as many developers as I possibly can find. So my role is very much a reach role. I'll be blogging a lot. I'll be videoing, podcasting. I'll be speaking at events and conferences, and I'll be trying to, you know, help as many folks out there in the UK community understand why they should look at Azure, what's in it, and help them sort of weave their way through some of the complexities of moving to Azure. So that's what I'm spending time on. What about yourself, David?
Well, that was an excellent New Year's resolution for you, Eric. And I had a similar one, but probably about 9 months ago. Actually, possibly over a year ago at the PDC, Professional Developers Conference 08, when we announced Azure. I'd already been doing a small amount of work in the background, but I've been loving it as well. Because Eric, you and I have worked together for many, many years at Microsoft. We've both been involved in similar types of emerging technologies. I remember when we used to do the MTS stuff. That was,
oh, yes.
That was over a decade ago. We did all of that as the bleeding edge.
We're not that old.
Yeah, sorry, Chris, edit that out. And, you know, for us, I think both of us, Azure cloud computing is that next wave that we're both really into. So I've been doing work, but not as highly visible as you've been doing, though I have been doing a few blogs, a few videos and stuff like that. But I've also been doing quite a lot of work with partners, with ISVs, systems integrators, people who build software for a living, because they've been some of the folk who first looked at cloud computing Azure and said, wow, this could really help us. And the reasons why I think we're going to come back to later in this conversation.
Yeah, so we have crossed paths at various points. In fact, there is a video on the web of us both sitting together. Now, what was that? That was when we did the David Chapel Day, wasn't it, in London last year. That's right. And the other good stuff that I got involved in, which was, again, all stuff in your area, which was more depth engagement, was when we were hosting some of the Corp folks over. And we were really...
Deep Dive Labs, yes.
Yeah. Actually, say a little bit about those Deep Dive Labs, because they were great. I thought they were, you know, a great way of helping some UK companies get into Azure.
So, yeah, so very much, as you know, I've always worked in this. Folk who want to adopt early and want to be on that bleeding edge, who can see the benefits, we try to get closer to them. And that Deep Dive Lab was a fantastic opportunity. We had about 8 companies in for the week. It was a technically focused event. We put in different rooms. We had a couple of the Azure product team over. We had several of the UK architects who understood Azure, including you and me. And we spent the time with them and help them sort of piece together their story, get code running. We gave them access to the latest bits before they were publicly released on the web for everyone else to get at, and really help them move forward, unblock them, and answer their questions about how good a match Azure was for the way they were thinking and the products that they needed to build.
Yeah, and I think in this same week we had some training going on as well, didn't we?
Yes, so we had two lots of 2 days training. So we worked with QA Training, and we got one of their trainers in, and they took a course that would normally be 3 days, and they compressed it down to two, and it gave the attendees on that the chance to really sort of drill in deeply into the different bits of Windows Azure and SQL Azure, you know, run through some labs and get some help, and again, get their questions answered.
Now, how did folks get involved in that? So if I was listening to this podcast now, I'd be thinking, that sounds great. How, you know, how did I not even hear about that? So you have a team blog, don't you? The ISV team blog, and a lot of the stuff gets advertised on that.
That's right. So a couple of mechanisms. One is the blog, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes there. Also, a lot of the folk that we're recruiting are Microsoft partners already. So they have a relationship with Microsoft, either through the Microsoft Partner Network or BizSpark if they're a startup company. And so one of the calls to action, I guess, would be is that if you're doing software development and you're interested in, you know, what we've been talking about today, getting yourselves involved with Microsoft and getting a slightly more formal relationship is a very good way of making sure you get updated, because all the events we do, we tend to put them out through the partner newsletter as well and through the partner portal.
Yeah, and you mentioned BizSpark. BizSpark's a great way if you're a smaller kind of startup in the UK to get involved with Microsoft and also to get involved with Azure as well, isn't it?
Yes, because the BizSpark is aimed at, you know, people at the startups. They tend to have energy and enthusiasm and ideas. You know, if you've got all of that and it's around software and you need to build something, you make some choices about which platform. And we think, you know, the Microsoft stack is a very attractive one. And since many of those offerings are targeted out in the cloud, their web-based applications, Azure is potentially a perfect match for them. So there's certainly some of the folks that we've been having the most interesting conversation. You know, the people who want to write the next Twitter, the next Facebook, the next Spotify, you know, they need heavy, good quality computing resources and great tools to build them.
Yeah, no, it's all good stuff going on. Do you have plans for the next few months around your depth engagement? Do you have any similar labs coming up for UK partners?
We've got a couple of bits and pieces, so it's a great link. Later on in February, week beginning 21st, 22nd, we've got an Azure Awareness Week where we're doing a number of different activities. I think we're hosting the next podcast that week. We've got some events going on, some more training coming up. We're doing a bit of PR with some of the partners who have actually already got offerings out there.
And it looks like you and I are off to Birmingham that Saturday, aren't we? To working with, Dave Evans, isn't it? To go
our
in.
Old mate Dave Evans. Yes.
Dave Evans. Apologies, Dave, if you're listening, which you should be.
Hi, Dave.
Don't be forgetting your name. And we're going to do an open code space event around Azure and get some folks hacking Azure stuff and asking us really complicated questions that you and I will shake our head at and look like it's really, really too hard for us to explain the answer to. But that should be quite good fun as well. That's all part of that week. Lots of good stuff going on in that week.
And we'll be launching a few videos. I've got a few visits coming up to folk who've been doing interesting stuff with Azure to shoot some short videos that we'll release around that time as well to give people a feel for what other folk are doing with Azure and how they felt about it and what their experiences are.
Yeah, I think one of the key things is that, you know, when I'm out there and I'm talking at, an event and people come up to me and they've heard about Azure maybe for the first time, certainly first time face-to-face with someone from Microsoft, there is that sort of belief that there's nothing really happening yet. It's all brand new. It's all just there in, you know, beta technology and nobody's actually really started coding against it. But actually, it couldn't be further from the truth. We've had an awful lot of companies in the UK and of course elsewhere as well being very active on Azure and really just waiting for us to go live.
That's exactly it, because we've had a year of beta effectively. So from November 08, we've had just over a year's beta at the PDC last year in November 09. We sort of said this is the final feature set for launch. And on the 4th of January, we kind of went live. So as you say, a number of people, the moment we went live, they had an offering ready to go.
So of all the companies that we've been involved with, one of those companies is AWS. And the rest of this podcast, once we finally close down, is an interview you did with AWS while they were back in our labs last week. Another company was RiskMetrics. Do you want to say a bit about those two companies?
Yeah, so AWS, they've done a very good job in the interview I gave with them of describing what they've done. But they're a perfect example of a product that's been out there, they've been working with Azure for over a year now, but unless you're involved in, you know, the Royal National Lifeboat Institute or something like that, you won't have probably come across that. You know, if you're a trawlerman, you'd probably be indirectly aware of this system. So they'll explain that in the interview. Similarly for Risk Metrics, we had both AWS and Risk Metrics across at the PDC in Los Angeles. They gave sessions there in which they talked about their experience. And Risk Metrics do some really clever stuff where they need heavy-duty processing. They do Monte Carlo simulations of Monte Carlo simulations, and they need to take all sorts of financial data and do some stuff, which, I'll be honest, Eric, I have no idea or fully understand what it is, but I know that it's important to them. And in the past, they would have had to commission hundreds, if not thousands, of machines for short periods of time to do that work. Azure is perfect for them. And we did a video with them, and hopefully by the time this podcast comes out, we'll have that live and we'll point to that as well.
All good stuff. Excellent. So there was a couple of other things we wanted to do before we started with the AWS interview. One of them was to see how briefly, which is the biggest challenge, because I think if we both had 2 hours to explain Azure, we could both do a terrific job on it. But we wanted to have a go at explaining it really briefly. And I'm going to throw it to you first. If you just have 1 minute to explain what the Windows Azure platform is, how would you explain it?
It's a toughie. I'm a technical person, so I'll try to technically describe what Windows Azure is in 1 minute. So basically, we've been building a number of data centers around the world, most locally for the UK, the one in Dublin. These have lots of servers in them. We've got them lined up. We do some very clever provisioning. We use Windows Server 2008. We use an optimized version of the hypervisor technology there, and we can provision machines on demand in that data center. But we hide all the details of that in a layer we call the fabric, which is responsible for making sure we get machines spinning, logging, monitoring, deployment all set up. We pump your applications into them, we bring them to life, and we make sure they stay healthy. And if anything bad happens to the software or the hardware, we restart it, we move them. And basically, it makes it easy for you to build applications that you can push up there and have scale up and down on demand without spending your time patching and restarting and configuring machines.
Marvelous.
How did that do? That can't be 60 seconds.
That sounds a pretty good explanation, and I'll try and take it from a different angle then, because that's probably how I would have started. When I think about Azure, well, if I think about what happens in development right now, people do development, they do deployment, and they do ops to keep those things up and running. And, you know, I'm a developer, so the thing I enjoy doing the most is developing. And I don't really enjoy deploying and all the issues that that comes up against in terms of procurement and provisioning of hardware and licensing. And I certainly dislike ops, which is all about keeping things patched and secure and always on the latest versions and worrying about things being incompatible with other things on the box and on the suite of boxes that I might be running my application. So I'd like to just focus on development. And for me, when I look at cloud computing and I look at the Windows Azure platform in particular, because it's a platform as a service, I think it helps me do that. I think it lets me concentrate on development. The deployment becomes extremely straightforward. Deploying it to many machines becomes extremely straightforward. And somebody else cares about those machines, and it's not me. Somebody else is doing the high levels of redundancy. Somebody else is worrying about patching the OS, patching the version of the database, patching all the other related bits that I would normally have to care about, or at least start talking to ops folks to make sure that all happens. So I think it streamlines significantly getting applications built and deployed and running well out there without worrying about some of the things around scalability and elasticity. And
I think we've both given a good solution. They do overlap there. There were some definite common themes there. As someone put it, we do maintenance so you don't have to.
The reality is there's a lot in there. I mean, there's a lot of different technologies from a lot of product groups. You know, SQL Azure is a big thing. Windows Azure is a big thing. We've got App Fabric. I know you want to call it .NET Services. And, of course, we've got Dallas, and we've got other pieces coming on stream as well underneath SQL Azure and further. So there's a lot in there. So it is a difficult thing to summarize. But I think it's an exciting thing. I've been running various surveys. A lot of people are interested in cloud computing. A lot of people think it's part of their future. And I'd like them to, you know, spend some time looking at the Windows Azure platform to make that happen.
Well, you can see why people do think it's important, because I think we're at an interesting junction time where, you know, it's a combination of commodity hardware, the ability to just sort of throw machines at a problem. We've been investing for several years in hypervisor technology that allows us to produce virtual VMs that can isolate different machines from each other. And then the ubiquity of the internet means that, you know, companies like Microsoft have been making really big investments in hardware and these data centers. And this is all just coming together at the right time.
Thanks for that, David. I think we've probably spent enough time talking between ourselves, and it's time we went to the interview with AWS. Until next time, thanks for listening, folks.
Gentlemen, would you perhaps introduce yourselves, please?
Yeah, thanks, Dave. I'm Richard Prodger, Technical Director at Active Web Solutions in the UK.
I'm Rob Blackwell. I'm R&D Director. We've been working together on a number of Windows Azure things, really, over about the last 18 months or so. Yeah,
absolutely.
And it's one particular one, the RNLI, the Royal National Lifeboat Institute, that I really want to talk to you about. So perhaps, Richard, you can start by giving a little background the RNLI and the project and how this all came into being. And particularly en route, can you tell us a little bit about why Azure caught your eye?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've been engaged with the RNLI now for about 4 or 5 years, and they first approached us and said that that their principal role in life was to save lives at sea, and we lose 20 or 30 fishermen, commercial fishermen we're talking about, around the UK and Irish waters every year. And they said, well, look, you guys are pretty smart with technology. Come up with an answer for that, please. And by the way, it's got to be really cheap. So we stood in front of whiteboards for weeks and scratched our heads. And cut a long story short, we developed in partnership with the RNLI a system called MOB Guardian, which is Man Overboard Guardian, which is a box of electronics that goes on the fishing boat, and the fisherman wears a pendant around their neck, a wireless device which communicates with the unit on the boat. If they fall in the water, it sends a signal via satellite straight into the operations, the RNLI operations centre and their headquarters. And that's great, and that system works and has been deployed since last January 2008. And so far, I'm happy to say that we've helped to save the lives of 9 fishermen so far, which was really, really good. But about 18 months or so ago, we've been working with Microsoft as well for a number of years, and tending to be more towards the leading or bleeding edge of what's going on in that kind of space. And we were made aware of Azure, what was in those days prior to its announcement of PCO8.
The code name here.
Yeah, it was Red Dog. we looked at that technology and we thought, well, there's a really good fit between what that cloud-based technology can provide with what the plans we had with expanding the system we had for the RNLI, because having now addressed the UK fishing market, there are a number of other markets that we could potentially go after in terms of saving more lives. There's the leisure market in the UK, there's the leisure market in Europe, and there's also the fishing, commercial fishing market around the world. I mean, it has been estimated by the International Labour Organization that about 24,000 fishermen alone lose their lives, so that's not taking into consideration any of the leisure market. So there is potentially an enormous scalability issue that we had. Now, we built the application with the ability to scale it in mind, but that scaling was done in the conventional way of rubber stamping out tin. Okay, so we would have to put more servers in, more data centers in more locations. Then we then made aware of Red Dog, now Azure, and we looked at that technology, and it was a really good fit because of the way in which it originally architected our application. It was predominantly client-server, web-based, web services-based kind of architecture, service-oriented architecture. And because Azure was just a natural continuation of the .NET platform, it was very easy for us to migrate our code across into the Azure platform. Now, there were a number of areas where we had some potential scalability issues, which are an element we had to re-engineer. So we made use, for example, of the queuing capabilities for message passing between different processes. But essentially what it allows us to do is, as we incrementally grow the number of end customers on the system, we can just turn up, by turning the knob on the Azure portal, we can turn up the number of additional servers and infrastructure that's provisioned for us automatically.
Now, the use of queues, now, you know, I've spent a bit of time playing with them as well. They seem to be good architectural devices to ensure looser coupling between key parts of the system and help you build scalability into the architectural design, rather than having to do it by gluing bits of tin together
Oh, you're absolutely right. Rob, perhaps you want to pick up on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great way of work distribution, isn't it? If you've got a queue, it's a way of taking a piece of work from one server to another, from one process to another. And if you're loosely coupling those things, you can fire up more nodes between those queues to deal with work, and you can do that on a sort of temporary basis. If you've got a big backlog of work that you need to clear, you can fire up more. And I think the great thing about Azure is you just buy the compute power that you need for the time that you need it. If you've got a big job that you need to process overnight, you can fire up the servers overnight and then shut them down the next morning.
Mm. So Azure is actually encouraging you good practices around the scalability there.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think because in a nutshell there are a limited set of services, it actually starts to make you think in more simple terms about how you're going to build your application. I mean, Rob and I are always having this conversation that whenever we get a new customer come on board in the company, we give the specification to the developers. The first thing they do is draw a database schema and build a SQL Server database and then start building web pages. Well, actually you shouldn't really be thinking that way if you're going to be building an application that's going to be hosted in Azure. I mean, certainly when we first started this project, SQL Azure wasn't available to us, and so we had to re-engineer our data back end to make use of the table storage capabilities, which in itself provided some challenges, but once you overcome those challenges you get massive scalability, essentially infinite storage, and you don't have to worry about that piece of it anymore. Now that SQL Azure is there, I think that's a good fit for certain applications if you're starting from scratch, or indeed if you're wanting to migrate existing on-premise applications into the cloud. But for massive scale, the table storage and the blob storage capabilities along with the queues, as Rob mentioned, are what's required.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about what the typical startup problem is, if you've got a .com startup, it puts in a web server and a database server, and then as it starts to scale up and get more and more popular, there's a point where you keep adding more and more web servers, and there's a point where that relational database thing just stops working, and when you get up to Facebook, size, it's just not going to work anymore. And I think the Azure platform is about providing you with some building blocks that allow you to scale out in a much different way. And that's partly about queues, but it's also about table store and effectively limitless storage capability. Mm.
So again, this theme is coming through that by getting you to think about scalability up front at the architecture and design bit, you're going to have a much smoother journey later on, rather than try to bolt on scalability, because most people that move from one server to two server is the hardest one in the world.
Yeah, you're
if you've
right.
built one server, scalability into your design.
Yeah, you're right. I think if you think about it in terms of processing elements and those processing elements having to be able to communicate with one another, then that by default is scalable as long as you've got the platform upon which you can do that, rather than thinking how much can I cram into this much memory on one server in one disk, one hard disk. It's that you just have to think slightly differently. But the nice thing is that the code is transferable. It's not a new paradigm that you have to learn. You don't have to go and send your developers on a whole load of courses to figure out this new way of programming for the cloud. You can literally point and squirt from Visual Studio your code straight into the cloud, and it works, provided you take into consideration the constraints that we talked about.
It's not all or nothing either, is it? You can have a hybrid application where some of it runs on premise and some of it runs in the cloud.
Yeah.
And that's a way of actually starting to move towards the cloud. I mean, with the RLI solution, there's actually a database that sits behind our corporate firewall, but it's still part of that whole solution.
And that was a big challenge for us, because I know we've been talking about compute and storage, but there are other aspects to Azure, particularly the app fabric and the service bus and the access control service. So we actually had to come up with a way that we could communicate back from our cloud-hosted application, our worker roles, if you like, back to on-premise data. And we did that through the service bus. And the reason we did that was because the service bus essentially provides a means of being able to remote two TCP IP endpoints and allow you to pass messages between them. And it provides all kinds of additional services with the bindings that are now available there to kind of circumvent some of the issues, like if you wanted to expose a SQL Server from behind the firewall, you have to expose port 1433 through your firewall. No IT manager worth their salt is going to allow you to do that. So you can use techniques like the service bus to do that. And that also provided us with a really great facility whereby we can monitor our applications remotely as well. Because I think there's limited capability currently in the Azure platform for monitoring what's actually going on. At the PDC 09, they released the diagnostics extensions, which allow you to do simple like trace.write line surfacing of those kinds of things and event log. logs and so on into Table Store, and then you can read those out. But that's not live information. We needed to know exactly what our applications and processes were doing in real time, because it's a safety of life system. If we throw an exception in one of our applications, we need to know about that instantaneously. So we set up a mechanism whereby we could send those exceptions via the service bus directly into a network management system behind our corporate firewall without having to worry about exposing anything over the network. So there's those kinds of features as well, which, if you look at the Azure documentation and you read the blurb on the web, those are the kinds of features, things that it doesn't really tell you that what's possible with this kind of technology. And I think we're starting to explore that and getting really excited about what that means for this application and for future apps as well.
Because you've certainly been pushing the boundaries. You were there very early on. You've passed over so quickly, almost listeners won't notice, that at the PDC 08,
yes.
We actually had an R&I video.
We did, yes.
That really took you through what you'd already done by that point.
Yeah, I mean, that we did a proof of concept to demonstrate whether this technology could deliver that, and it did. And we've literally spent the last 9 months or so fully engineering that, and we deployed our application live at PDC 09 this year, and Rob and I had the opportunity to present there as well, which was really nice, and also to network with the guys like Clemens Vasters and others. It's a great opportunity, really.
Because one of the things we did at the PDC, as well as the announcing new stuff, was have these sessions where folk like yourself talked about the experiences you'd actually had, and being very open and honest about what you'd done, what you liked, what was difficult, and what you're going to be doing going forward.
I think you're right. I think one of the great things about Microsoft is that it's open to listening to partners and the development community, and really taking on board the feedback and having the opportunity to get involved really early. I mean, we can see that some of the conversations that we've had and others have had have influenced actually what is going on, because we've got real life applications that have real challenges. And we can see how some of the features and things that have emerged, we've had the opportunity to contribute to that thinking.
So this is definitely one of the benefits of a proper beta cycle,
is that
people actually do.
Yeah.
We've revved a number of CTPs through that year and a bit.
Yes.
For sure, and you've seen those changes and the new features being rolled in.
Yeah.
But the things like the deep dive events where we've been out to Redmond, and we've spent time with the product teams, some very smart people who are prepared to invest time in our project as well, on the basis that they learn about what kinds of features that we might need. I think that's really powerful, and it's been tremendous fun. And getting to work with people like Clemens Vasters is just career highlight kind of stuff, really, isn't it?
We're going to have to get Clemens on this, as I know Clemens from way back.
Society.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, going forward from where we are now, I mean...
Because we're in January when we're recording this, so Azure went live on the 4th of January, so we're switching from a beta to the commercial model.
Yes, I mean, at the PDC we had the final SDKs released and so on, so as far as this particular application is concerned, we've been spending the last month or two just making sure that our application is as stable as we need it to be on the platform now that's kind of formally released. And as you say, since the 4th of Jan, the billing is starting to appear, although that's all going to be zeroed out until the end of the month, but we're now starting to look at what are the size of the bills coming back, do we really understand what we're going to get charged for. I mean, we can see the figures and say it's 15 cents per gigabyte per month, but actually we what is that actually going to mean when the bills drop in and the messages start coming over the message bus? I think we're quite comfortable with what's going to come back. I don't think it's going to be a huge surprise, but I think it's just understanding that space, because a lot of our customers are asking us, okay, great, I understand what you want to try and do with this technology or what we want to try and do with it, but what is this going to cost us? Is it going to be cheaper from a hosting perspective? Almost certainly. But, if we're going to be charged bandwidth in and out as well, and transactions to the back store and so on, what is that actually going to mean? So it's really getting a feel and a handle for that piece is one of the key areas for us at the moment.
Because architecture and money are never fully disconnected when it comes to design.
If only they were.
We'd have the perfect design. But,
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
I think we're excited about some of the other things coming through on the platform as well for other customers. You know, we've built some good credibility by doing the ROI work, and that's been fun. But there's much wider applicability here in the whole enterprise space, all kinds of other interesting things and new features coming through on the platform, like the content distribution network and so on, things that are still in CTP. And I think our game plan is to stay close to those and to stay close to that innovation through the next year as well, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's quite an interesting roadmap going ahead now with the Zero, and I think we'll see some interesting features emerge over the coming months. So I think it's a two-phase approach for us. It's about stabilising what we have and onboarding new customers with an established platform, but it's also about keeping at that leading edge as well, and as you said earlier, continue to push the boundaries and take it as far as we can, really.
So we'll take that as a challenge to come back to you in a few months' time, because I know you're working on a number of other projects.
Yes.
And now that Azure's live, be interested to have an update from you on what other ways you've pushed the platform.
I'd be very happy to do that, Dave. So
thanks very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.